Now this would be the second call time plus the horse's beaten lengths, giving one length to a fifth of a second. Do you know what the minimum would be in Southern California to win? To have at least a better than 70% chance of winning. Let me rephrase that. Anybody know? 85, right on. That's it. 112. So if you're looking at a pace line where a horse is run behind a 112 second call, you're looking at a horse that's deficient early to win this race. He may not be a win contender, probably will not be a win contender. So, I mean, this stuff is really important. What about a stakes horse? Let's go to the other end. What would be a very good early pace rating that would be necessary to perhaps win a stakes race? Anybody? Huh? 109 is 100 on the early pace rating. How many 100 early pace routers do we have in this country?
Two.
If that many.
One's dead.
No, I mean, they've done that. Kostroma on the turf went a 107-4 or something on the way to a world's record, but that's a once in a lifetime. That's on the turf and a lot of other things. It's about a 99, I think it was, on adjustment. 92, exactly. Yeah. That's it. That's a grade one. If you can go to 92, it's a 110-2, 110-3. They've got to be in that position and then be able to do another 92 final fraction from there to the finish line to win. A 184 will win most grade one races in the United States. Now, these times and numbers are all adjusted for track speed, but do you see the range? We're only talking about a few lengths difference between the bottom level horse that's at Hollywood Park and the top in the country. Very little difference. How about at Long Acres, where they run the first night that Dick and I played, we saw nothing but $4,000 filly claimers. Some of those horses run 63 final fractions. And they scoop them up in a cart after the race and they drive them back to the barn because they can't walk. You know. But the same principles apply up there. We knew after a couple of races what the minimum was going to be. You had to have something going for you. Another way to look at a race on a minimum, what about the difference between the early and the final? The balance, if you will. What's the spread? In a route, if you needed a minimum of 85 early and a minimum of 85 late, if you've got a balance of zero and you've reached both those minimums, you're probably looking at a horse that probably can win this race because he can be there at the second call and finish the race, depending, of course, on his competition. If he's facing all 90 final fractions and 84 earlies, he's in a world of hurt. But you don't see that. But it's real easy to track this stuff. You know, that is basically when I'm home and I'm leading a normal life, that's the first thing I do. I get the results charts and calculate this stuff. And it's like automatic. You should know when it's wet or when it's dry. I know that you need a little bit more final fraction on Wednesdays than you do on Thursdays, and a little more on Thursdays than you do on Fridays. Why is that? Does anybody know? They dig up the track on Mondays. They do the serious track maintenance. The dirt is a little bit softer. And as the week goes on, you need less and less final fraction and more early. You can track that through the variant. If you want to track it through the daily racing form variant or Tom's variants, you'll see it. It's automatic. Let's talk about the turf for a minute. Turf's completely different. Anybody know what a minimum final fraction would be on the turf? Minimum. This would be Southern California, so you're talking about horses that are probably at least $50,000 claimers and up. These are fairly expensive horses anyway. So $50,000 claiming horses on the dirt, where is that in the scale of good, I mean from low to high? About the middle, a little bit above the middle. So what would you expect that you'd need to have on the turf? Does anybody know what it is? You'd like to have at least a 90. 97 is terrific. you know, depending on the early. You know, if you've got a 73 early and a 97 late, the horse is going to be too far behind at the second call to win the race. But you can tell this stuff from total pace. I mean, it's easy. It's uncomplicated. And that's why I did what I did with it. Because it is uncomplicated. Everybody can understand this. You know, we get letters from all over the country and people understand this. It really helps them understand. Look, at this horse got a 94 early. This horse, the next highest is 88. Horse A has a lot of advantage in the early department. If he only runs a 75 late in Southern California, he's not going to be able to put that advantage to good use, more than likely. What if he moves his early down a little bit because he's not going to get the pressure? His final fraction might come up. It might and it might not, depending on a lot of different situations. But knowing what these things are and tracking them is absolutely basic, very, very important stuff. Very important stuff. I can't tell you how important it is. I for a while, did not keep a model because I got very... I won without it, to be honest with you. But I found a lot more betting opportunities by using the model, exploiting exotic bets especially, because that was the weakest part of my game. I was always a good win handicapper and a good win better. But I had trouble with exactas. And now they have trifectas in Southern California, and I had trouble with those. But how about if you've only got three horses that are par in this race, and there's a big gap between them and the rest of the field? Boy, have you got a betting opportunity. There was a race at Long Acres last night that if it wasn't my first bet of the week, and it wasn't a maiden claiming race, I would have absolutely made the biggest bet of my life on. Because the horses, there were three par horses, one of whom I thought would win, the other of whom I thought would run second, because they were, each was slightly better than the one after it. And then there was this monstrous gap of about six lengths to the rest of the field. You know. And I mean, these betting opportunities are there for the taking. And that's what we're able to impart some of this information, is when you can make this play and when you can't. When you can make this play and you wait patiently is when you can make your payday, you know. But you're going to know this stuff if you know what the minimum is. If you've got 12 horses and only three horses can meet a minimum on either end of their pace line, boy, have you got a betting opportunity. Or even better, how about the one horse that is par on both ends and no other horse can say that, and only two other horses are par on either end? This is a match made in heaven, you know, because now you're eliminating some of the possibilities. You don't have to go into a three-horse box. You've got a horse that probably will win. You've got a horse that might be in front of him, and if you want to take a secondary position with this horse as a possible win horse and taking the field wire to wire, that's a possibility with your win horse underneath. And then you've got the other horse that might run second and might run off the board. And nobody else. That's it. You don't get into a six-way combination. So these things are important. I don't know how many people have ever seen this little thing, this little track profile. We publish them constantly. They're in. If you write for them, if you write from the total Pace Makes a Race, we'll send you a free copy of this stuff. Just send in a self-addressed stamped envelope or whatever the thing is in the back. And they're putting the follow-up and stuff like that. But if you don't use them, you're giving away a big part of your game. And you don't have to go to the races every day to do this stuff. Does anybody or does everybody know how to calculate the speed rating of a race? I want to touch on this because if you don't go to the races every day and you don't get the racing form every day or the results charts every day, you can calculate your own speed rating and figure out what the variant will be, and you'll have very accurate records, and it's not difficult. Each day in the racing form is a copy of the three-year best. Does everybody know where that's found? Raise your hand if you don't. You don't know where it is? Okay, they give a section of... They have the track records for Hollywood Park. Underneath the track records, there's a little section in fine print, and if you want to come up afterward, I'll show you what it looks like. But they give you the three-year best for all the distances. So you take your sprint races and you put a speed rating to them. If the best at Hollywood Park's a 108 in the last 3 years. So if the horse runs a 110, he gets a 90 speed rating for the race. Take all the sprints, you add them up, and divide by the number of sprints. That will give you your variant. If it's not completely accurate when you start, so what? It's going to be more accurate than nothing. If you want to use 17 constantly, you can still do that. But you're better off a little bit more effective. And then you can develop these charts. And you have them the day after their run. So you know. If you see it, you know, if suddenly the track starts running early, you know immediately. Suddenly the horse's early pace ratings are going up. Their final fractions maybe are going down, maybe not. You don't know. But you're going to have that record. You're going to see every race that's been run at these various distances. You can look at them as individual distances, and you can also look at them as a collection of all sprints. What's the difference between sprints? How about 7 furlongs? That's a little bit stranger distance. What kind of a horse wins a 7 furlong? Or even weirder, 7.5. You know, if you're early at 7.5 is lower than what it has to be at 7 and 6.5 and 6. What's the minimum early for 6.5 or 6 furlongs? Does anybody know? 89 better. 80. There have been horses who have won with as low as 87. If you've got a horse, or how about this situation? How about if the race has no early, or everybody's below the minimum? You're looking at a race that might be difficult to handicap. Maybe your numbers will not stand up. Because why? You don't have any horse that wants to set any pace. You know, you might be able to exploit it, you might not. Yes? I don't use it. I have nothing against it. It works terrific. I'm just saying that from my standpoint, this is just easier. It's the same thing. It's just a horse of a different color. You can use the second call time if you want, if that makes it easier for you. You know, one of the keys with the methodology is you have to make it your own. You have to adapt it to your own personality. And for whatever reason, my logic tells me that 99 is better than 98 and so on. So that's why these scales were designed on a 1 to 100 scale. And it's real simple. And you know, if you see a horse with an 80 and another horse with an 85, horse with the 85 is 5 points, 5 lengths, or 5/5 of a second better at that positioning than the other horse. And it's real simple. It's uncomplicated. 5 lengths is a big advantage in this game. 2 lengths can be a big advantage under certain circumstances. So I don't really have anything more. Does anybody have any questions?
Save for tomorrow.
Okay. All right, there's a question in the back real quick while Howard's coming up. Okay. Save the questions, because we have a section of the meeting where you can write them down and then different people will address them.
Thank you, Tom. The reason let's give old Tommy a hand here. He hasn't had a hand since he won his award hours ago. The reason we don't want you to ask questions right now on these details is that these people are going to go over these races very, very meticulously tomorrow. It's going to be a real hard and heavy morning into the afternoon. And all the questions you have now will be answered by demonstration tomorrow, as opposed to an intellectual answer to an intellectual question. You'll be able to see it tangibly. Now, Tom said one thing that I want to remind you about. And here's the problem we've had in the past, and I want to correct it at the butt. He says that his observation of his track is that on Wednesday you have to have a faster third fraction than on the other days because they've done something to the track between Sunday and Wednesday. That's his observation about his track. You should have an observation about that at your track every day of the week. Don't go home and say, Tom Hamilton said that you've got to have faster third fractions on Wednesday when you're playing Aqueduct or Calder or something. Determine these. He's just giving you an observation from his profile, his model, his knowledge. Have that local knowledge. Let me ask you a question. And I do this every time, and I hope I don't get as disappointed this time. How many of you can tell me, and I don't expect you newcomers to participate in this because you're not supposed to know, but how many of you who have been with us for any length of time can tell me what your win percentage was in the last 20 races you handicapped? This gentleman, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Now, don't have to tell me this, but ask yourself this question. Why, if I've been in this methodology for 3 months or more, why can't I give him an answer to that question? Ask yourself that. First you say, do I want to be a winner? Yeah, you're going to say yes, aren't you? Then why don't I know my win percentage? How can you be a winner when you don't know your win percentage? How do you know whether you're winning or losing? Anybody got an answer for that?
Yeah, lack of capital.
We're a family here. Any of you who didn't raise your hand got a good answer for that? Why don't you know your win percentage?
No
what?
No book.
No book? Oh, you're not keeping records. Okay. We're going to have a man up here in a minute who is a very big stickler on keeping records. That's why I'm kind of setting it up for him. Not that he needs setting up. Okay, now, you passed the one test. Those of you who raised your hand, you know your precise win percentage for the last 20 races. Do you know your average mutual for those last? Let me see hands on that. A little better. I assume that the same people who know their win percentage know their average mutual. Folks, if you don't, and this goes for the newcomers too, you can start fresh. If you don't know your win percentage, you don't know whether you're winning or losing. If you don't know your average mutual, you don't know you're winning or losing money. So what you're saying is, I'm paying $250 to come to a seminar to learn how to win, and even if you knew how to win, you wouldn't know how many you were winning if you keep up that attitude. You have got to be able to answer. If I meet you on the street, hey, hi, Joe, what's your win percentage this week? I want you to hit me with 63, 58, 49, whatever the hell it is. What's your average mutual? 810, 940, 1280, whatever it is. Now, how many of you who do know your win percentage and your average mutual, how many of you are getting average mutuals of less than $8? How many of you are getting average mutuals of more than $8? How many average mutuals of more than $9? Pretty good show of hands. I won't go up to 10. I know there's a lot of you who raise your hand. How many would raise your hand at 10? Virtually the same people. Now, I'll ask the gentleman who raised his hand at under 8 that he's playing the same. I'm using that word again. See, going against my own injunction. I use the word playing. He's investing at the same track that these other people are. Hollywood Park, right?
Base Hollywood.
Where are you from, sir?
Southern California.
Okay, he's playing it too. Or wagering at it. Why do they have higher average mutuals than the other gentleman? I'm not knocking the other gentleman for getting less than they. But I will tell you precisely why. See if you don't agree with me. You are using a revolutionary, non-mainstream handicapping method, but you're qualifying your horses. You're qualifying what you call a playable race by mainstream standards. You are allowing those recency rules and those odds rules and all those things that the public looks at, you're allowing those to influence your use of this methodology. They're not. So their mutuals in the $10 range and yours is in the $7 range. That's the only difference between them and you. You're just as good a handicapper. But you're saying, you're looking at a race and you're saying, this is not a playable race because of something you read before you joined us. You've got a fixed belief system which says that, I don't know what it says. Some people say, how many of you have ever said this? I got a horse that's going off at 20 to 1. I must have done something wrong. Boy, did I do that in the beginning? I go there and I had the simplest form of phase 1, phase 3, or whatever the hell I was using, ultra scan. And I get these huge odds horses come up number 1 or 2 on my readouts. And I said, geez, Howard, you must have done something wrong. And I was going to be the guru. And I come home to my wife and she said, how'd you do this week? 67%, honey. How much money you make? $26. And you bought a $300 meal. You know, it didn't add up. And I figured out, hey, wait a minute. You didn't do something wrong. The horse won, and you didn't bet. What you did wrong was not believe in your own figures and not bet on it. The public, my dear friends, no matter what you've read, is not that good a judge. You can read Ziemba and Mitchell and these people who tell you that the public is the greatest judge of odds there is. That nobody can beat the public. That is horse manure, folks. Ask these people with their $10, $11 average mutuals. They are not intimidated by the public. Neither are they intimidated by what the mainstream experts who've been writing before even I was born, and that's a long time, tell you is a playable race. Every race in which every horse has three to the most of you, North American pace lines, is a playable race. With Bradshaw, if it's got one halfway decent pace line, it's a playable race. But three, you can win any race with three pace lines in it. There's no such thing as a non-playable race. Now, that doesn't mean you should start rushing into the kinds of races that you just don't have any skill of. That means that on those dark days, you should practice. Dick, don't go away. This is the longest introduction in history. On these dark days, you should practice getting the kinds of races that you now don't seem to be able to win. I've got people who say, boy, I'm dynamite at six furlongs or in sprints, but I can't win routes. Do you know why they say that? They read a book once, and they were more impressed with that book, because it's probably the first one they ever read, which said that sprints are easier to get and routes are tough. So they get it in their mind, routes are tough, and they start believing that stuff. Routes are not tough. Routes are easier with this method, don't you agree, than sprints. And they pay a lot more. The longer the race, the more important the pace. Kind of rhymes, doesn't it? Folks, there is no kind of race out there other than maiden races with first-time starters that every one of you can't get. But don't go rushing in and spending your money on races that you aren't skilled at right now. On Mondays and Tuesdays, if those are your dark days, on rainy days, on snowy days, practice, practice, practice. How do you think that Marion Jones and Bradshaw and all these other people who have talked to you, how do you think that they got to their skill level? Do they think that they just had some skill of vision that came to them one day? They practiced. They went over and looked in that computer program, went over it and observed things. They learned to recognize patterns. So don't saddle yourself with, I can't. Even Tom Renner says, I have trouble with turf races. I said, Tom, I don't want you to come to a seminar ever again and say you have trouble with turf races. I want you to sit home and take every turf race you ever lost and figure out how you can win it. And he's doing it. Now, secondly, and this is where our next speaker shines, you don't have to have this huge win percentage. I've got people calling me, they got 95% winners in their top three horses. But they're only getting 68% with their top two. How do I capitalize, make money on all 95% of them? Boy, this guy has got, I say, boy, you really have a problem. I'm sitting worried about getting people to win some money, and you're complaining because you can't get 95%. What is the difference between people who seek these tremendously high goals of win percentage, and those who make the most money? The man with a win percentage that is probably not as high as some of you people who are here, bewildered and confused, he has not got that high a win percentage. He only claims 57% winners. But he makes more money than anyone in Perkle. Now, I'm not going to ask him to do money management. I'm going to ask him to tell you how he capitalizes on a race where he knows he has the greatest opportunity to win with that lower win percentage. What you're doing is you're not capitalizing on your advantage. And this man is. And that's the difference between having all the money that you need or want and breaking even or just making a few bucks. I give you Dick Schmidt.
I just like to get out.
Yeah.
Work the crowd. Yo, boy, I'm not doing much work. Yeah, let go, you son. There we go. Now I can do it. Yeah, we'll lose this thing and I can move around out here.
This is called Zedlavania, folks.
You betcha.
You want some?
How about, we really don't have time to take a break. You'll cut into my precious moments up here before you. Why don't you stand up? I have always found that the attention span is limited more by the buttocks than any other part of the body. Come on, give them a rub. Oh, you know you want to. Yeah, give them a little shimmy down there. Yes, sir. Okay. How do you make money if you don't have a flossy win percentage? You bet a lot of money on the races that you're going to win. If you don't win, don't make the bet. It's easy. End of discussion. Okay, you can sit down again. Isn't that better? Ooh, yes, yeah, so comfy and nice. That chair will feel comfortable for another 10, 15 seconds. And it's back to being made out of concrete. Somebody someday will make a room somewhere with comfortable chairs, but it hasn't happened yet. Having a high win percentage is a neat thing. And a lot of beginners aim at the high win percentage because, let's face it, a high win percentage means a low loss percentage. And there's nothing most people hate more than losing races. And yet, losing races is part of racing. You're all going to lose races. The guy with a 75% win percentage rarely stops to think about it, but he has a 25% loss percentage. 75 is huge. It's eric. Very, very, very few people can maintain that for any length of time. And yet that means you lose. You're supposed to lose 1 out of 4. Right? Losing is not wrong. You're not incorrect when you lose a race. You just lost. The difference between a winning race and a losing race is that the winners you won and the losers you lost. But the process is supposed to be the same. And I think the biggest mistake that people make is that they have a great fear of losing. And just as the baseball player who has a great fear of making an out will probably never succeed because the greatest in the game are going to make out 60 or 70% of the time. If you can hit 300, there are people who will pay you $5 million a year to do that. That means they will pay you $5 million to fail 70% of the time. Well, luckily in horse racing, we don't have to fail quite that often. But we do have to fail. The most destructive thing that you can do is try to win them all. Because once you start trying to win them all, you get more and more and more conservative. When you walk in the track, you should walk in saying, I want to have a good day today, positive mental attitude. But you should also walk in saying, I'm probably going to lose 2 or 3 races. I probably am. I'm going to bet I got 6 races handicapped here. I'll probably lose 1, 2, maybe even 3 of them. In Seattle last week, Tom Hamilton and I handicapped in front of the class, went over the day's races Sunday morning. Everyone trundled over to the Long Acres. We went 3 for 6. Did we have a good day? $10, $12, $6.80. It's 100% return on investment, friends. I think it was a good day, but it's only 50% win percentage. Win percentage is a comfortable thing, and it's something that you need to aim at. But what you really want to do is set yourself a goal. And normally, goal setting involves dollars. And let's face it, most of us really don't care how we get to those dollars, right? I mean, you might even be willing to do something really sissy, you know, bet the show, something like that. Not bet an exacta in a race. Really wimp out. You know, just bet, make a show bet in a race. You wouldn't tell your friends you'd do it, but you probably would do it on the QT. Right? Am I right? Well, you're laughing now, but how many of you ever have done it? Once you have a goal in mind, and I'm going to talk more about this on Sunday, but once you have a goal in mind, I think the thing that having a goal that you stated and written down will aid you because you'll simply say to yourself, okay, I'm here, my goal's there, how do I get from here to there? Until you have a there, you're going to stay here. If you don't have a there, you're never going to move from here. You're going to stay where you are. A person without a goal has achieved it. He will simply stay where he is. Now, one of the things I'm going to ask you to do in preparation of our Sunday talk is set a goal. How many of you in here would like to make or seriously augment your income at the races?
Yeah.
All of you. How many of you in here wouldn't? How many of you would be satisfied to go to the races, have some fun, entertain your friends, and more or less break even? Anyone? Because I'll tell you something, that's a perfectly legitimate goal. There's nothing wrong with doing that. It's just that you have a different goal. But most of you will express your goal like this. I want to become a professional handicapper earning X. And X is a dollar amount. You know what your needs are. For some of you, X is $49.95. No, just everything. He wants, okay. We all have our little expectations. He can't hear me. He's out of the room. I get real brave when they're out of the room. So, if you have a goal, it should hardly involve money if you want to become a professional. And let's face it, money is why we're here. So what I'm going to ask you all to do, you don't have to do it right this second, but this is really serious. I'm going to be really serious. I'll even pitch my voice a little low, you know, deep and macho. Ooh, I like this. I'm going to carry this thing around with me forever. Now, at last, people won't laugh at me when I answer the phone. Hi, can I talk to your husband? Yes, any time. Hey, you're a big guy, high voice, what can I say? Write down your goal. Take out a nice blank piece of paper and write it down. You don't have to do it right now, and it can be anything in the world to do with handicap. Please don't, you know, my goal is to grow up and wear skirts. No, my goal is to, you know, but if you want to put my goal is to pay for my sex change operation, fine. But write down both an immediate and a long-term goal. And also put down a number that's attainable. Because we're going to talk about how to attain a number. And if your number is $20,000, this is a year. A handicapping year, however you want to take it. That's fine if it's 50, if it's 100. You know, my goal last year was to beat out Andy Beyer and his damn $50,000 a year at the races. Ha! Take that, Andy. Okay. Now my goal is to double him. You know, maybe I'll make it, maybe I won't. You don't make all your goals, but you keep striving toward them. And at least make it realistic. If right now, you know, if in the last 18 months you've cleared a fast $52.40, let's not make our goal $300,000, huh? If you're not winning right now, that's your goal. If you are playing and not showing a flat bet profit, betting $2 a horse, and at the, you know, at the end of the month, you don't have, you know, they've given you back less than you've given them, you know what that's called? Losing. Then your goal is to become a winner. If you're a winner, then your goal is a dollar amount. So write it down. Write down your goal and bring it with you on Sunday. Now, I'll tell you something. They will not be collected. I'll only pick a random few of you to embarrass in front of the rest of the auditorium here. Most of you will get away scot-free. And if you don't pick a goal, no one will ever know, except you. You will know because you won't have a goal. And therefore, you will have achieved it. You will leave here with the same goal that you came here with, which is just where you are. So unless you're already making more money than you know what to do with, if your biggest problem now is putting an addition on the back of the house to store your money in, Let's do a little goal setting. Howard also talked about betting. On Sunday, I'm going to give you kind of a rigid approach to betting. But in the last couple years, I've developed a little more of a free-form approach to betting. And because this is the certain methodology, we're going to do things bass-ackwards here. This is really a much more advanced method, and I would recommend that you not try this until you have taken a bankroll and doubled it and redoubled it and redoubled it and done that maybe 50 or 100 times. Handicappers want to do things like fall in love with horses. They want to say, ah, I knew this horse was going to win. I only got $10 on it. Why didn't I bet more? One of my favorite quotes, nobody ever bet on a winning horse. That's only said after the race. Before the race, it's still $10. I don't know. Can I survive? Maybe. But I have developed techniques that enable me to win between about 55 and 60% is where I've been. That's about one horse betting a third at a time. And yet, like in Seattle, 3 out of 6, 100% ROI. Your goal is going to determine. If your goal is make money, then chances are that was a successful day. If your goal is win races, that's not a successful day. I went out to a class in Beaumont that we have occasionally, and this was a couple, 3 years ago, and I was a little rawer and a little more naive then, and I got up and made a very similar talk. I was trying to convince people they didn't need a high win percentage to make money. And I said, listen, Hollywood Park is just open. I'm only hitting 52%. But I have a $17 average mutual. And I've had that now for, I think it's 8 or 9 days. No one ever keeps that kind of mutual for very long. But I had people coming up to me and putting their hands around my shoulders and said, gee, Dick, I know how it is. That's really tough. Only 52%. They didn't hear the rest. Nobody sat down and said, wait a minute, 50% at $17. This guy, he's rich. He's betting 8 to get 17. Whoa. That's Never Never Land. They heard, oh, he's having problems. But yeah, I went through a tough spot like that. Why? Because their goal was impress people, win a lot of races, wave that exact ticket in front of their friends. I got that one. I got that one. I'll just throw these other 9 away. Yeah, here it is. And I ever meet one of these guys at the track, he's got this ticket in this pocket, and this ticket in this pocket, and this ticket in this pocket. The 4 and 6, I got that one. He's got to go to the men's room to clear it. Yeah, it's like a magician setting up here. Yeah, those guys that do that. And a different goal. He wants to appear smart to his friends. Okay, I guess that can be a legitimate goal. But writing it down on paper makes it a little hard, doesn't it? I want to appear to be a wise ass in front of, 45 strangers in Section K at Hollywood Park. Is that the goal you really want? No. You probably want to make some money. One of the things that I have been experimenting with and have now decided is successful is varying bet sizes. Now, to do this, you're going to have to make a huge sacrifice. You're going to have to give up your amateur status and keep records. Sorry, there's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. You got to do it. You've got to go out there, keep a track profile, keep a Brohammer model, know your own strengths, your own weaknesses, and then when it comes time, you got to be able to walk up to the window and pull the trigger. One of the reasons I like the Phase 1 technology is that it not only tells me which horse is going to win, or tries to. It also tells me by how much. And I'm perfectly willing to sit out in the infield of Santa Anita and make $10, $20, $30 bets, buy 6 races, and then unload. Go maybe from $20 to $500, and then just right back to $20. When I see the advantage, I go for it. I had one day last year, this last meet at Santa Anita, where I went 1 for 7 and made a $3,500 profit on a day. Now, was that a good day? I can't answer that question because I don't know your goal. For me, I was happy. My wife was happy when I got home. I have a big day, I give her $100. I'm a spender. I got it, I spend it. You know. I throw those nickels around like manhole covers. Tom Brohammer and I have a big contest going. Who's the cheapest guy in Perco? He's ahead on points, but I'm gaining. Okay. But what you need to do to be able to do this kind of up and down betting is have a good, reliable feeling, both for the program you're using and for your own insights into a race. I not only insist on having a big advantage in a race, I insist that the race be clean. I don't have a layoff horse. I don't have a first-time starter. I don't have horse shipping in from Europe. I don't have a horse who's maybe not shipping in at all from a track that I've never seen before, and I'm not sure of that adjustment. In other words, it's a nice, clean race. All the ducks are in a row. Then I feel that I have a real big advantage. On my prime bets, I'm an 80% player. One horse. Prime bets are, by definition, one horse. And that's pretty good. You bet. But on the other hand, if you're getting more than one or two prime bets a week, you're getting too many. You don't know what a prime bet is. And I'll tell you something. If you're changing computer programs every 3 weeks, if you're not keeping records, if you're just starting with this, and you don't have a history of success behind you, you don't know when to make big bets and when not. So I'll talk a little more about this, but as to identifying when to do it and when not, I can't tell you that, because it's going to vary for each one of you. When I do it is when I have an overpowering horse, a clear picture into the race, and a good feeling about the race. I can talk about the first two, but I can't tell you how to do the third one. And the only way to do that third one is to do this and win with it for a long time. As I said, I was a winner for a long time, and I just started doing this in the last couple of years. And for a while there, I kept saying, well, if this doesn't work, I can always just run back to percentage of bankroll. And that's where I recommend all of you start. But what you have to become is bulletproof in this methodology. You are the favored few. Dame Fortune has touched each and every one of you on your foreheads and said, you shall have a chance to learn the best handicapping method extant. You may go forth and win because you have the tools, if you will use them. And that's pretty cool, right? You're all pleased with that. You're lucky. There's thousands of handicappers out there that wish they had your opportunity and don't know that it exists. Are too stubborn or too lazy to try it. Okay. It's up to you to master this thing to the point that you have confidence. Tom Hamilton talked about making the methodology your own. And that's pretty accurate. Howard will allow any of you to make the methodology your own. He prefers you not sell it, but we do have that problem occasionally. But make it your own, and then tread very, very lightly on this.